Australia 1, Tunisia 0. David Winner with you from Doha, the Al Janoub Stadium, where we're keeping up in Qatar. And we are really keeping up in Qatar tonight because we are absolutely over the moon to have witnessed in the flesh Australia's historic World Cup win, the first at a World Cup finals in 12 years. The first clean sheet in World Cup since 1974. Tom Smithies, David Davidovich are with me. We are overcome with excitement and emotion after watching that match. Even though we're here in a professional capacity, you can't get help but be overcome by an occasion like that. Gentlemen, Mitchell Duke's 23rd minute winner was the difference. Tom, your verdict straight off the back of that game here outside the stadium.
Mitchell Duke's 23rd minute header combined with a performance of toil, of sweat, of inspiration, of a whole bunch of players playing out of their skins, producing the performance of a lifetime. Players who play at a moderate level, producing a performance that I've had friends from around the world texting me saying, what an incredible performance. They played out of their skins. They played together. They did all that stuff we talked about in the podcast the day before the game. All these things that had to go right, but all of these players had to lift and play beyond themselves. Guess what? They did.
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, we've been lucky enough to witness, attend all three of the Socceroos' World Cup wins. And look, it wasn't as dramatic as Kaiserslautern, but it was certainly as special and, you know, as momentous, because they're really in with a massive shout now of making the round of 16. And as you point out, Tom, you know, a team of players, of individuals that have copped a fair bit of stick over the journey. A lot of people have written off, didn't expect them to get here, to produce that performance here at Al Janoub Stadium against a Tunisian team that was up and about, that had 30 plus thousand fans behind them, who were cheering every Tunisian touch, jeering every Socceroos touch from the get-go. That was one of the great Socceroos performances of all time.
Of all time. We can't reiterate more to the listeners or viewers back home how loud the noise was. At one point in time when Matt Ryan was sort of delaying a goal kick, when he had spilled across and was given a free kick, I actually had to cover my ears. It was so, so loud, the intensity of the whistling. And I don't think there's any greater tribute to the Socceroos' performance that by the end of the game, it was dead quiet in terms of the Tunisians. It was all the Australian fans who were cheering. Not only did they take the Tunisian fans out of it, they withstood it themselves. We asked, would they have the mentality to be able to do that? And they did, Tom, both in terms of just their approach, but also the technique under the pressure and the pressure cooker of that environment to withstand the Tunisia's late onslaught.
The first few seconds were fascinating. I was panicking a little because they lost possession after 8 seconds, just gave it away. Then there were a couple of wild tackles. Fran Karacic gets a long ball and volleys it straight back. And Graham Arnold is saying to everyone, let's calm down. And suddenly they did. It was as if just things clicked into place. Suddenly there were little combinations going on. The ball was being moved around. They were keeping possession. And the Tunisians were getting frustrated. You saw just after Australia scored a dreadful tackle on Riley McGree, I think it was, and Craig Gooden, rather. And that was the frustration of the Tunisians at the way the Australians were playing, the control that they were having. Now, you'll never control a game of that for the whole 90 minutes. And there were periods where Tunisia were pressing and pressing. But my goodness me, they put bodies on the line. And the structure was so good. I would count on the fingers of one hand the number of times Tunisia got round the back. They were forced to cross much, much deeper than France were. And so, therefore, you've got defenders who are looking forward and much more comfortable heading the ball away than across from Mbappe that's coming from behind them. That whole structure worked superbly. And when he had to, Matty Ryan made a number of good saves.
Yeah, Tunisia's coach conceded that Australia's tactics did work and did help them prevail, in the sense that Tunisia were playing far too many longer balls than they would have liked, and they struggled to play out through an Australian press that was coherent, was diligent, was well organised, and everyone from Mitchell Duke all the way through the midfield played their role tremendously. And if they did get through, and there were a couple of scares, Tunisia did have their chances, big Harry Soutar was there to rescue them. And even Jackson Irvine a little bit further forward, the resilience of these players tonight, Dave, was really quite exceptional.
Well, they're going to say big Mitchy Duke.
Needed to get that in, didn't you?
Well, more on that in a moment. But, yeah, all very good points. Tunisia were outstanding against Denmark tonight. I think they were somewhat surprised by what they came up against in the Socceroos. Great collective performance, agreed. Graham Arnold, a superb coaching performance by him and his coaching staff. Saw him speaking a lot to René Meulensteen on the sidelines. Often they chat before he goes and gives instruction to the players. We were surprised that he only made one change from the first game, which was Karacic in for Atkinson at right back. But in the end, it was absolutely justified. 11 outstanding performances. Even Karacic, who you mentioned, really nervous at the start. Deganek gets in his ear after 8 or 10 minutes, tells him to calm down in their native language. And it was almost a turning point for him, wasn't it? But some of those individual performances, you mentioned Suter, Matty Ryan, Aaron Moy in midfield, who was superb. I think Mitch Duke got the official Man of the Match award. I mean, honestly, he could have given it to 5 or 6 of them.
Matt Lecchio, I don't think he had anything left in the tank. He was just, he worked so hard. I don't know if it came across on the television at home to our listeners or viewers, but the work him and Craig Goodwin did defensively, retaining that shape, was actually inspirational.
Yeah, Craig Goodwin didn't have a pre-season. Played most of the game against France, scored that brilliant goal, played most of the game here. Again, he had nothing left. When he trudged off, it wasn't particularly because he was trying to waste time. I don't think he could put his feet one in front of the other any quicker. And the up and down, they were there. It was Goodwin's cross for the goal, but just before half time, it was Goodwin shepherding the ball out over his own goal line and screaming at his defenders.
And in some ways, it was tougher than the France game because, yes, they had to probably retreat a little bit more against France and support the fullbacks against Mbappe and Dembele, but they also had more of the ball here, so they had to get forward and they had to, you know, create those opportunities. And Matt Lecky was oh so close to scoring that second goal. His teammate Jamie McLaren, usually it's the other way around, but McLaren whipped in a beautiful left-footed cross, and Lecky perhaps could have timed the run a little bit better, but, you know, to your point, I think he was pretty gassed by that stage.
So, Graham Arnold...
we're being super critical now.
You are.
We were gassed. I don't know how he wasn't. Graham Arnold came under some criticism, and it's going to happen in a World Cup. There's so many people looking at every single angle, and we're going to dissect it left, right and centre for his selection and his changes. Here, we were all surprised by the 11. Like, so he stood firm in that. And his changes as well. I thought today, like Dave and I were sitting next to each other and trying to look at what might happen. Well, I'm not saying that's why they were right, but in the end, I think they each one of them came at a juncture where Australia might have just been on the back foot or might have just needed a bit of a reset. And each one of those players came on and played a really, really, really important role. Jamie McLaren, you referenced, none more than him.
Absolutely. Every single one of those substitutions was at the perfect point in the game where that player could make a difference. So, for instance, bringing on a Grand Kowal would have been totally wrong. And bringing on, I think, Mabil earlier, you know, he left Goodwin on until he literally nothing left. Same with Matt Lecky. McLaren, I was watching his pressing. I've spoken to players about how smart he is with his pressing and didn't go because they'd obviously identified which players are comfortable on the ball. There's one of the centre-backs, they didn't press. Let him have the ball. Let him, because he can't do anything with it. As soon as the other guy gets the ball, then you go close. Mm-hmm. So even at the heat of the battle, late on, they're still playing to the game plan and still playing to their instructions.
They got their combinations right as well. You know, when they took off Duke and McGree, I mean, Duke was kind of coming in and being the link man, the target man, holding the ball up, getting the others into play, whereas McGree was, you know, bombing on and looking for those balls over the top, in behind. We know McLaren's kind of that striker that likes those chances, sort of, you know, running in behind, whereas, you know, Hrustic was coming in and getting the ball at his feet and, you know, doing nice little combination plays and getting his foot on the ball. So I thought they got their substitution spot on, the combinations were right, and it'll be really interesting now over the next few days to see, how they, you know, what first 11 they pick for the final game, because there's some really good options in there.
The first question that Graham Arnold got at his press conference just before was from a foreign journalist, and they said, so what are your tactics going to be for the Denmark game? And I was in, and he just says, oh, come on, just give me 5 minutes
to
enjoy this
it.
One. Oh, my goodness. Mitchell Duke. Must talk about Mitchell Duke, because that was, we had hairs on the back of the neck with that moment. He's a player who's known for being a bit of a Graham Arnold battering ram, probably has had that stereotype put onto him for being the guy that does all the defensive work, was picked today in a game where we all thought we were going to need a goal. And we got the goal from Mitchell Duke. This is a fantastic story and a vindication for the selection and a vindication for a guy who's really forged himself an amazing career, you know, and now is one of our few World Cup goal scorers.
A couple of little moments of Mitch Duke's career. I remember him coming through at the Mariners and coming in and being this enthusiastic kid who he went and played five-a-side with his mates. And he wasn't meant to, and I think he got a bit of a telling off from Arnie for doing that. And he was sort of young, and all he wanted to do was play football. And then fast forward a few years to when he joined the Wanderers the first time, And I went and had an interview with him and did a little photo shoot in Western Sydney. And he was talking about how standards at training had to be higher. He barely joined the club, that he was there to drive standards and he wanted to make sure that the players trained like they played and all that kind of thing. And I was thinking, wow, you've grown up. You have become a leader. You were quite comfortable. You want the players to read this. You're not worried about offending them. You want them to demand more of each other and of themselves. And we've seen that more and more. He's a top guy. You know, he's a really sound individual. He doesn't get ideas above his station. He's a solid leader. He's a good influence in the dressing room. And I'm really glad for him that he gets what he deserves.
He worked bloody hard against France. Mm-hmm. He was gassed. That's why, you know, we're talking about Jamie McLaren potentially coming in. But if I had a dollar for every time someone told me, how the F is Mitch Duke playing and starting for the Socceroos, including some mates, I won't name names, but over the last couple of years, I'd be a lot wealthier than I am now.
Wow.
However, he put in an unbelievable shift today. He very much epitomises this Socceroos team that's, you know, been written off, that, you know, a lot of people say they're no good, they're, you know, playing in second and third rate leagues and whatnot. But that header was sensational. He had that strike from long range, which I got very excited about.
Mitchell Duke
didn't get into the top corner, but it almost did. But his performance, his all-round performance, and also getting under the Tunisian skin today. Yes. He's tackling, he's harassing. There was a little exchange with the Tunisian bench at one stage, you know, eating up some seconds, and that really got under their skin. He got into the crowd as well. Like they were getting really frustrated. There was a guy about 10 meters from us who I don't understand what he was saying, but he was having a crack at the Aussies, and I'm pretty sure he was having a crack at Mitch Duke. I'm not sure he knew his name, but it was a huge performance from him, and a beautiful little moment as well, scoring the goal, celebrating with the J symbol for his young son Jackson, 6 years old. Now, apparently a couple of days ago, the players were allowed to go out and see their families, and at the end of that, Jackson was beside himself. He didn't want his dad to go. He got really, really emotional. I'm getting emotional thinking about it, talking about it. And yeah, he obviously had to go, went back into their Aspire camp. So that was just a beautiful little moment for him to, you know, be able to have with his son. And there was a shot of his son up on the big screen, and presumably on the screens back in Australia and around the world with his son, you know, doing that little J symbol back to him. So, you know, a beautiful father-son memory that those two will obviously be able to, you know, have for the rest of their lives.
Did you need a hug, Dave?
I got it almost as emotional as you did doing the podcast last night when you started talking about how much you loved all of the Socceroos players, how they were all just beautiful blokes.
So. You know what? There was a great moment just before the game when during the national anthems, the cameras are all on the starting 11, but on the subs are on the bench. And Andrew Redmayne, you know, who's so tall he's going to damage planes, is standing next to Cam Devlin, and a tiny little Cam Devlin, and he just picks him up, a little hug. Holds him, and I said to Redmayne after the game, what was all that about? And he said, I've known him since we were a kid. I've said to him, like, flipping heck, we're at a World Cup. It's amazing, isn't it?
They forget
they're human beings. Yeah. That's
and
the thing.
They are a bunch of top blokes, this team. They really are. There's no ego there, and you're just really happy for them because they've had a lot of criticism and setbacks, but, you know, they've created their own history here. First World Cup win since 2010, and they deserve it.
They do indeed. Just one more thing on that goal, because if we talk about that goal being a snapshot of all sorts of things, it is a snapshot that this team can play football. Because in that moment, you had distribution out to Mitch Duke, you came short to get it. You had him then peel off as he played it.
Well, for those listening,
for those watching,
watch the video,
you won't be watching
Tom
that
has
now.
Demonstrated the touch. He scored a goal in the media game the other day, and he's pretty happy with himself
here
now.
Here we go. And it was a header too, so we've been accused of
Mitch Duke-esque.
Censoring that we haven't called Mitch Duke's goal Tom Smithies-esque, but we digress. Beautiful touch from Duke coming short, combination with McGree. At that point, if all it was to retain possession, it would have been a really good example of this team learning from the France game. But it filters out to Craig Goodwin, out wide, bombing on as well, with the improvised header coming through from the deflection. That's why maybe there was such a clamour for the side to play, to be on the front foot. And you know what? They waited for their moment. They waited for the right game, and they did, and they showed that they can.
They did, and they deserved that goal. They and the moment you discussed earlier, the McLaren down the left and that low cross, I mean, that was also a brilliant move. They played, there were patches of football that they really showed what they can do. But talking to Milos Deganek after the game, and he was saying, we would love to have had 75% of possession and play like Brazil, but you have to play to your strengths, you play to the occasion. Let's look at the clubs these guys are playing for. Mitch Duke plays in the Japanese second division. Somebody said there are more players from the Japanese second division in the Australian squad than there are in the Japan squad. And yet we produce moments like that. The captain of the team, Sampoli, that's in the German second division. These guys are not household names. They play football at a level, and so what they did today was alchemy. The performance that they produced.
However, the stage they had tonight, as we conclude, gentlemen, should make them household names. Prime time in Australia. The ratings that we'll see come through will be phenomenal. Arnie referenced in his press conference that when the Socceroos and Matildas play at World Cups, AFL fans, cricket fans, NRL fans become football fans. We jest that you got emotional last night, Tom, but we follow these guys and the game intimately. We know their stories. We want to make them heroes. We want to tell the stories that they of how they've got to this point, to be at this stadium here, being the third side ever to win a game for Australia at the World Cup finals. And tonight's platform, capturing the imagination of the nation, setting up a game against Denmark with the shot of getting into the round of 16, that is the platform that the game and these players deserve. This is a big moment. This is a big moment, Dave.
It is, and the players referenced it. A lot of them had seen it in the change rooms. The vision, the images coming from Australia, particularly from Federation Square in Melbourne. Jackson Irvine was showed it during the mix zone and got really, really emotional, when he was shown the videos. So, you know, it's huge for them. I mean, you're going to have kids walking around, lo and behold, wearing Mitch Duke tops, you know, over the next few weeks and months. There's a new batch of heroes here, and I think, you know, there's so much that's been made of the golden generation, 2006, and there are a few of them here in the stands, Harry Kuehl, Cahill, Mark Schwarzer, but yeah, it's a new bunch of heroes, and I think you referenced it earlier, Tom, the fact that a lot of these kids don't remember, you know, 2010, and most certainly 2006.
Well, there's a new generation who have it. We can't call these guys the golden generation, but they have stepped out of the golden generation shadows
and created their own legends. My own kids were down at the park in Sydney watching on the big screen. I just had a little video from one of them of these dozens and dozens of kids lying on beanbags, the tension of the last few seconds, and they're all like this, and then the explosion of joy. They'll never forget that. And they're all, the camera just goes wild and pointless at that stage because they're all just racing around celebrating. Now these kids are 12, 13, up to 15, 16. They are going to remember that for the rest of their lives, and football is going to be associated with visceral feelings of joy and happiness, as well as despair and excitement and all of that stuff as well. But that's why this matters so much.
And like we keep referencing Kaiserslautern. Kaiserslautern was a long time ago now. Your kids, teenagers, they don't remember that. They now have the Al Janoub Stadium, you know, that'll go down Doha, the 26th of November, 2022. Yeah, indeed. Just any final thoughts? We're not going to go look ahead too much because we have a couple of days to go deep, deep, deep into the game that's coming up. I'm going off to France, Denmark now to scout, to have a look at both sides and see what's going to happen ahead of that final game against Denmark. But any final thoughts, remarks, we wrap up this really wonderful edition of Keep Up in Qatar?
Well, I put a line in my piece on it, which is, in the wider scheme of things, this doesn't matter so much unless it's married to a positive result against Denmark. But to hell with that for now. Let's enjoy this moment for what it is. And yes, we can go further and we'll have to talk about what the team needs to do against Denmark. But let's just enjoy that moment, that night at a famous stadium in Qatar, and all of those players, what they've created and what they've achieved, and the fact we were there and we can tell that story.
Agreed 100%. It's a team that's greater than the sum of its parts, but I believe that performance confirms that these players are underrated. They're a lot better than what they've been given credit for. So you hope that moving forward beyond this World Cup that some of them do get opportunities to really kick on with their careers. I think there's a perception, particularly in Europe and some of those big leagues, that Australian players aren't that good. We're not producing players as good as, you know, the golden generation era, but I have no doubt that win, and particularly if we can get to the round of 16, will change perceptions, and all of a sudden the scouts will come searching for young Australian players again.
Well, that's the most enjoyable Keep Up in Qatar podcast we have done, because it's been an emotional, exciting, wonderful day here at the Aldrin Ebb Stadium. I'll catch up with you both a bit later, but I'll bring the listeners an update in a couple hours' time from France and Denmark. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Well, a 2-1 win to France over Denmark. And if we're under any illusion as to the quality of France and the quality of Denmark, we saw it in that match tonight. The afternoon for us at the Aldrin Ebb Stadium was a rollercoaster of emotions and chaotic and energetic. And in the heat, it was quite an afternoon. And what we witnessed here tonight was a real tactical, interesting match between two nations who have deep ambitions to go well into this tournament. It was nil all at halftime, deadlocked, really interesting tactical battle where Denmark actually were quite conservative. If we talk about the Socceroos getting criticised for their positioning a couple of nights ago when they took the 1-0 lead against France, Denmark started in a 5-4-1 formation, very compact, very well organised, and the first half was a really interesting battle to see who of the playmakers, who of the big stars would stand up, particularly intriguing between Antoine Griezmann and Christian Eriksen. Second half, France came out, had a couple of good chances before Kylian Mbappe opened the scoring, a quite sensational combination with Theo Hernandez down the left. But the moment that happened, we started to see Denmark take up some more advanced positions down the right, both fullbacks, both wingbacks, I should say, who are particularly top class. They pushed forward and immediately it reaped dividends with Andreas Christensen nodding home a corner that Christian Eriksen had sent in, deflected onto him, and he went at 1-1. At that point, as Socceroos fans, you're thinking, this makes the equation quite interesting come next week's game. But then France showing their quality, had a couple more really good chances, and what a combination. Griezmann into Mbappe. Mbappe was the flash against Australia. Here he scored two goals that showed his determination. And the fact is, he just loves scoring goals. And the 2-1 win means France go to 6 points. They celebrated with their fans afterwards. Denmark remain on one. It is all to play for now when the Socceroos play against Denmark at the Aldrin Ebb Stadium, where, incredibly, a draw will be enough for the Socceroos to progress through to the next stage of the World Cup, and of course a win as well. So much to count down to, much to look forward to, but the overall takeaway is that this will be a really, really, really tough match against the Danes, who push France all the way and are a very tactically sophisticated side with lots of quality players, particularly in the middle of the park. And it'll be interesting to see if they come out all guns blazing against the Socceroos or whether they take a similar approach they did today. All of that will be discussed in the coming days ahead. Thanks for your company in today's episode of the podcast. David Wiener wrapping up from France against Denmark. We will do it all again with you tomorrow. Enjoy the wash up to the Socceroos' goal to win. What a day for Australian football.